Welcome to What's Love Got to Do With It, a short series of podcasts exploring the role of love in professional education, health, and social care settings. This is the second podcast of part two of our series on love, entitled The Challenges of Working with Love. In this podcast, the team identifies both some of the benefits and challenges of working with love. Let's begin by listening to Nancy Cunningham, a Meaningful Care Matters trainer and consultant.
I would say working with love is a benefit to carers from their perspective, able to be themselves, to give it to somebody that they're caring for, and also to give it to members of their team and to receive it from members of their team, from management, and even the people that they're caring for. So it's very reciprocal. I think when love is shown, it's about building relationship. It's about building trust. And those things are really key in life in general, but certainly in this line of work. If carers are able to show love, I think, unfortunately, in a lot of training situations, they're taught that it's not professional, that they are there to do a job and to do it well, but they're not to get connected to people. Sometimes even as far as not being able to touch someone because that might be seen as unprofessional or inappropriate. But I think when they're able to be themselves and show what they're really feeling, again, that builds relationship, and I think it strengthens how much you care for someone, because you're able to show that, you're able to touch someone, you're able to tell them how you feel, and so it's about showing part of who you are and not just showing a professional persona.
Here's Joe, a dementia care worker.
When I first came in, Janet was the first lady to actually bond with me, I would say, because she's quite a feisty lady, but once I go in the room, she just lights up, she's smiling. I probably remind her of someone she's met before in her life or past life, but she can't actually distinguish our faces. She just sees me. She's like, oh, I know you from somewhere. And obviously I'm just going, oh yeah, we met years ago with friends. And you just, as soon as I see her, I'm just happy to see the lady. She's like one of my best ladies here. There's nothing more effortless than that. Just walk in the room. And there's an example. I went on holiday for 4 weeks last year. I came back and the first thing she said, where have you been then? I've not seen you for a long time. And I was not expecting that. It makes my day, actually. She's just a lovely lady. I know we're doing a job, but making you feel special that you're wanted as well from the family just goes to a different level, because it's all right doing the job, but when you feel needed as well, it just makes everything easier as well.
The benefits of working with love as a support worker, it builds your character, it builds your understanding, and it gives you friends. Some people might be lonely, and the fact that there's love in your workplace, it makes you more whole. That's what I've come across to. So,
Harriet, a midwife in the Homerton home birth team in Hackney.
Not to be too corny, but midwife means with woman, as you probably know from Sophie. And it means, and if you don't have time with woman, then the impact of your care is diminished hugely. And that's why you do the job. You do the job for that moment, that glance, that hand on the shoulder, that nod of the head, that tear in the eye, whatever it is, the baby that comes out and, you know, and cries its eyes out. It's not really all about delivering a baby, which is what lots of people think midwives do. It's all of the other stuff that counts towards that meaningful relationship, and I get to do that a lot, and I get lots and lots of thank you cards, and I get lots and lots of chocolates and donuts and creams for my hands, and lots of gushing messages from women about how pleased they were that I looked after them in their pregnancies. And that means a lot. It means a lot. So love is, yeah, you give it and then you get it back.
Here's Vandana Iqbal, Assistant Director of Nursing at Clonskee Community Nursing Home, Dublin.
I think staff really gain from it. Like the girl, like healthcare assistant who brought mugs, like she gave something, but she gained back joy and contentment in that, you know. So I think like it's really, really important in the relationship with residents and staff, that staff actually gain back that whatever measures they have put in place are working from them. To see a smile makes the staff happy, and they drive, it brings them joy, you know. Not then they're thinking what to do next in that. So it, I think it just drives us to actually work harder, but also to see work differently.
Wow. Sounds like working with love can make work more satisfying, meaningful, and rewarding. But that's not all it does. It can make things a little more difficult and even complicated too. Here's Laura Clavier again.
Seeing the lack of love at work, it kind of makes you want to work harder. It makes you want to correct their wrongs and comfort the people that you support a lot more. And seeing it so regularly on a daily basis, and it's not intentional, it's just become comfortability for the workers. Or I'll just do it effortlessly, or just do this quickly and then I'll wash this up, or just I'll do it, you don't do it, I'll do it, even though they're meant to be doing it, kind of thing. Seeing that so regularly, it does hurt, and it makes me think, well, what's the point of this company? Aren't we here to support them? No, of course we're here to support them, but it feels like we're here to just help them get by, barely. It's like their life skills that they have that we need to keep a hold of, we're taking them away because we're impatient, or we're thinking too much about the tasks at hand and it's taking too long. Or you just don't really care if it gets done by them or you. So you just do it. I actually experienced it yesterday. Yes, example. So an example of taking things away from a person that doesn't show love at all is yesterday I was helping a lady in a wheelchair. She's got cerebral palsy and she can't speak. Her only life skill that she has on this earth is holding a spoon and feeding herself. That's it. So as her support worker, I support her. I give her the spoon and I support her arm up to her mouth. That's how you support her. But the lady that was working with me that day, she said, I've never seen anybody do that with her. You're the first person. And I said, well, how else does she eat? And she said, they just feed her like a baby, kind of thing. They're not exercising the very few life skills that they have. And what's the point of, aren't you meant to be helping their growth? But you're taking away it ultimately. Working with a lot of love can cause a lot of stress, I believe, because if there's days where you're not there, you start to wonder, oh, is this person okay? Or how's the family coping currently? or if you know that the service user is going through stuff at the moment that you can't be there or you can't control, you can't help, then that does, that can kind of, yeah, it can hurt a little bit. But that's why you're there ultimately. You're there to help the person, I believe.
Here's Harriet, the midwife, reflecting on the challenges associated with putting your heart into your work.
I did an essay on empathy. I had to write 3,000 words on it. And it was very closely linked to burnout in health professionals, because if you take that little chunk of you out of you every time something goes wrong or something, you know, it could be the frustration of not being discharged at 12 o'clock when the doctor said you were going to be discharged, and you're dealing with that woman and that partner because they've got their toddler to pick up at nursery at two or whatever. It could be a small thing like that, and you're feeling bad that you haven't been able to give them what they need to be able to go home and be a nice family together with their new baby, or, you know, to somebody losing their baby that they've been trying for 10 years for again at 20 weeks or something, you know, that kind of story is really difficult to deal with. Sometimes you feel at a loss as well, that you can't fix everything. You're not a social worker, you're a midwife, you're not their friend, you're a midwife, you're not their neighbor, you're not going to be there all the time, you're a health professional. And in midwifery in particular, there's a very blurred boundaries between, they see you as their, some women see you as a friend, because you're very involved in their lives in a very joyous moment in their lives. Yeah, so we get supervision as well. So we get it used to be called supervision, now it's something else, but there are midwives that are trained to be listeners for us. So if you've experienced one of those traumatic events, because you're empathetic, you've taken it on board yourself, and you might have found something quite traumatizing. There's been a few occasions when I've needed to speak to somebody about things that have happened, and there was a few tears, you know, there was a few, I don't know whether I can do this anymore, did I make the right decision, what if it happened again, would I make the right decision again or not, and I don't know how to proceed. And you when something goes wrong, your foundations as a midwife sometimes get shaken quite a lot. It might not stop you from doing the job, but there's a couple of things that have happened in my career, but after one of them, I felt very unsure about my decision making, even though the decision making was okay. I felt very, very unsure, and I became quite anxious about making very simple care plans for women, and literally texting the team going, do I need to do this at 26 weeks or is it 28 weeks? And I know the answer. But and I said, I'm just asking you because I've lost all my confidence. Because so, if your confidence is gone, then that autonomy is frightening, not freedom. It becomes a hindrance. The autonomy becomes a hindrance because you're unsure of your decision.
Here's Alex Cohen, a disability and long-term conditions educator and activist, and her husband, Lionel Roth.
I think the role of supervision can be where PAs and carers can feel they can get support, because sometimes they may also feel that what's being asked of them is too much, or sometimes they may encounter a difficult emotional situation, which they need to unpick a bit with somebody else and say, and maybe say, did I handle this well, or is this appropriate if I say and do this? Or so it's a support mechanism, it's a mechanism for them being able to talk about difficulties or worries or concerns that they may be having, and I think that's very important, especially when you're doing quite intense and involved and sometimes emotional mm-hmm. work. Training and supervision are very important so that people can find the levels that work for them, where they feel comfortable. You know, some PAs and carers may feel more comfortable with having a kind of deeper, more intense conversations than some other PAs and carers might. And that's okay, as long as the PAs and carers are okay with that, and the PA user is as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's necessary, because sometimes there are people who have no other social connections and social networks. And then the role of a PA and carer is very important. But that's where the boundaries become even more important, and where I think supervision is vital. I mean, one thing I would say that comes to my mind when you're talking about dementia care situation, where the person with dementia thinks the person caring for them is a family member, a son or a daughter or whatever. And then, you know, the carer or the PA may respond like their daughter or son or whatever. And I feel that that is, okay, stick my neck out, the right thing to do. Because I believe, I'm quite, you know, of the idea of the, I mean, my mum had dementia, but she had quite mild dementia, that you enter in to the person with dementia's world. And if they think you're their son or daughter, arguing them out of that, that doesn't help them at all and can make them very distressed. And actually, I don't think it does any harm to behave towards them like that. But what I would say is still really important is that the person needs to keep their boundaries, to be mindful of their boundaries, to be mindful of what they can and cannot cope with. And that's where supervision comes in.
Yeah.
Because they may be with a client who thinks they're a family member, and they may be fine about playing that sort of role, and they may be fine about keeping their boundaries, but they may not. And so then supervision can be really helpful in saying, okay, maybe you could do it this way, because this might be a way of still being able to help the person with dementia, but also keep yourself protected and your feeling of boundaries intact.
Here's Jo again, reflecting on her experience of knowing her boundaries.
I think you can be loving and professional at the same time. When you're being loving, you know, obviously, not to get too close, but you want to get close enough so they trust in you and you have that trust in each other that you can support each other. So I think that it kind of goes along, because you can be professional and loving as well. There's no need to just choose one. There's certain family members that know where there's a limit and they won't go further than that. But there's other family members, you have to tell them like, oh, you can't actually do that, you know. It's kind of tricky to know which family members can tell where's the boundary and where it isn't. But you as a staff, that's when your professionalism comes in, telling them, oh, you can't actually do this, you know. But just still making them feel loved as well. Like, oh, let's try something else instead. Let's try and do something else. To be fair, I've had my fair share of telling off, because I personally can't, I think I struggle with boundaries when it comes to family members, because I just see them as family. They could be my mom, my uncle. There's one man, the family member, when he hugs people, he takes it too far. But I never saw it as a problem until one of the team leaders brought it up. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I'll make sure I know it from now on. So I did kind of struggle to understand where the boundaries were. But once I got told where the boundary is, I'm like, oh, all right, I get it now.
Mm.
I can do my job, show my love and set my boundaries as well. There have been reports that it made sexual advances to younger females, but I just I didn't take it into a board. I just thought, well, he hugs me, I hug him back. That's kind of what we do anyways. Because he was never sexual with me, so I never considered it. But then I got told, obviously, and I'm like, fair enough. If he approaches me for an hug, I'll go for it, but I'll never initiate him to hug me. So if he comes towards me and tries to hug me, I won't stop him. It would just be a quick hug, but I would never initiate hug from him.
Sometimes people can become very connected to people that they're caring for or vice versa. And so there can be a dependency that's created sometimes. I think there is a balance between being professional and being who you are and being a very loving person, which I think is certainly achievable. But I have seen situations where, in this case, a care worker was very connected, really loved this individual that she was caring for. They reminded her of her grandmother. And so she was doing things like, you know, spending her own money on this person, accepting gifts from this person that the person couldn't really afford. And it really became, I guess, maybe in that case, it was a bit of a problem. And so a discussion had to be made and some boundaries. I guess that's what I'm getting at, is sometimes when you really feel love for somebody, you don't always have boundaries. And so you need to be careful about keeping some boundaries in place and not crossing those.
Nicole Mitchell, a massage practitioner and trainer from Cornwall.
I suppose it's about being able to assert yourself positively with regards to boundaries. And not all of us are particularly good at boundaries. And I don't know about you, Luke, but I'm constantly having to reassess my own boundaries with different people as to, you know, maintaining a healthy relationship. And I think when you look at care work, you need to look at, you need to support people in developing healthy relationships. I think that's absolutely fundamental to any good care work. And if you think about the fact that relationships should be based on trust and well-being, and that means you're going to form attachment, then I just think it's a no-brainer that you might need some help with regards to boundaries. Or, okay, what was it that you found difficult? And we all bring our own relational past, you know what I mean, our baggage with us. So there might be triggers for us that we need to explore. And I think when they're addressed, as opposed to just quashed down, crack on and get on with your tick box of administration. And if you can sit with Betty for 2 minutes later on, that'd be great. But I think when you start to look at, you know, what you bring to the work, your whole self to the work, then that's where really good supervision can happen, I think. And real growth can happen for you as a person, and therefore more worth with your work.
We've listened to some of the benefits of working with love and some of the issues it might create as regards to boundaries, compassion fatigue, and even burnout. We've heard about the role supervision can play in helping us learn how to negotiate and maintain healthy boundaries, and how boundaries might need to change in different circumstances. I would like to end this discussion with some words of caution about the idea of being loving itself. Being what we see as loving might feel good to us, but is it always what the person we support wants or needs? Here's Alex Cohen and her husband, Lionel Roth.
Well, when Lionel first told me about the title Loving Care, I was like, whoa, actually, for me, if I looked at an agency where their kind of strap line was Loving Care, I'd sort of go, no, I don't want that. Because I want care from the PAs. I don't call them carers. The PAs that work with me, I want them to be caring, yeah. I want them to treat me with respect. I want them to treat me with dignity. But I don't want them to love me. I don't need them to love me. That feels very inappropriate and overburdensome, both for me and for the PA's perspective. So it kind of put me off. I was like, I'm very interested and very happy to be interviewed and discuss it. But for me, I don't want, as a first principle and as the main aim of the way the PAs work, is to be loving. I don't need that. It makes me kind of feel a little bit like there would be some patronizing going on, a little bit like a kind of older relation is towards me sometimes as an older person. Like, you know, oh, poor you, life must be so terrible. I've got to help make it better, you know, and I really don't like that. I call that the kind of garden fate mentality. And I really don't like that. I want a PA that is going to be a facilitator, who's going to be my arms, legs, you know, help me to be able to participate fully in my life and the activities that I want to participate in. And I don't want somebody who is kind of overly friendly, or when I hear the word love, it makes me think of PA who wants to sit next to me while I'm having coffee and chatting with my friends. I don't want that. I mean, I've had PAs for about 17 years and I am friendly with them. I like them. They like me. Well, I hope so. I mean, I've had one PA who stayed with me for 14 years. I've had another one who's been with me for 12 years. So I must be doing something right, maybe. When I think of sort of lovingness, it makes me feel overburdened, like I've got to remember their birthday. I've got to remember their partner's birthday, if they have children, their children's birthdays. You know, the things you would do to your friends and family that you love. That's, you know, it's exhausting enough kind of organizing your day when you have certain health conditions and when you have a disability without having to kind of worry about carrying out the sort of things that you might do with a friend or family member that you did have a loving relationship with.
It's really struck me over the years, comparing Alex with other PA users who have a different relationship with their PAs, a different emphasis on the relationship. So some are on their own, some don't have a partner, and some recognize some of the distinction that Alex makes between a professional working relationship and friendship, and others want more friendship from their PAs. So there are different emphases on those relationships. And what it makes me think is that as clear as Alex is about some of the dangers of and some of the difficulties of the complex power dynamic each way, those people who use carers or PAs who want more friendship, then there may be even more difficulty when there is tension in what's wanted. And my concern with love in care is that because the word love is so much broader, it has good things as well as things that would be inappropriate in a professional environment. I think that the difficulties that we've described, even with just friendship, that can arise on occasions would be far harder to maintain a good boundaries with a word that's even broader than friendship, which would be love.
Jane Allsop, a former head of Haggerston School, Hackney, London.
There is so much about, so much said about it in our society. But I always think about people who don't have it, who don't feel loved, and don't have people to love, you know, many people to love, with children and young people, that for some of them, there is not a lot of love in their lives. And it doesn't mean that that it's helpful necessarily to drown them, saturate their surroundings with love. It's about a feeling first. It's about feeling respected and feeling warmth and feeling regard, you know. It's about those things without necessarily naming this thing. I'm going to give an example, actually, from thinking about young people who don't live with their families, you know, who possibly come into the care system, and in an emergency they are placed it with a foster carer, and after enormous disruption, you know, in a moment of crisis, the crucial things about the foster carer's environment are probably clean clothes, decent food, a bed to sleep in, somewhere to put whatever possessions they might have, absolute basics. And nobody needs to talk about love in that setting. It is the basics, somewhere to sleep, and so on. And sometimes those elements in schools are the most important thing. So it is about coming to school. If they've not had anything to eat, it's about them getting some food. It's about them knowing that their possessions will be safe, whatever possessions they might have with them, they'll be safe all day, that they themselves will be safe all day, and that people will be reasonable and be fair. And you could argue, well, that's love. And of course, I would say, yes, it is. It is. It's treating with respect and warmth. But it's not, if you like, it's not going on about it. You know, we don't need to talk about this. Nobody's going to be, you know, possibly even asking you how you feel. They might not ask you. They might not ask you anything. There might be sufficient integrity of you, the child, that nobody's going to bother you, because actually not bothering you might be the most important thing. When you talked about carers who can be very affectionate and warm and cuddly, of course, particularly with young people, some young people and children, that is in itself intrusive and uncomfortable. Probably then doesn't feel loving.
Let's pause and reflect. What was it like listening to people talk about the benefits of working with love? What do you think people gain from working with love? What kinds of issues or challenges can working with love create? In what ways can being loving blur the boundaries? And what are the risks associated with having unclear boundaries? What did you notice about the role of boundaries in caring relationships? And why are boundaries so important?
How can supervision enable people to have healthy working relationships? And how can supervision help people work with love? In what ways have you struggled with knowing your boundaries in your work or personal life? How do you know when your boundaries are blurred or unclear or need asserting? What can you do to help maintain healthy boundaries and or avoid compassion fatigue and burnout? Thank you.